A falconer of 23 years believes the ancient art might help protect our native raptor population and tackle pest problems. Aotearoa has three native birds of prey, the ruru, the swamp harrier, or kahu, and the New Zealand falcon, or karerea. Chris Brook is the co-founder of Kahu Conservation, a rehabilitation centre specialising in raptors, and he joins us now. Hi there, Chris.
Hey, Jesse, how are you doing?
Good, nice to talk to you. You came up in conversation, which is how we've ended up talking to you, I think, yesterday, when we were talking about this wildlife sanctuary where they've got 500,000 sparrows and starlings roosting, and someone got in touch and said, could we teach a falcon to scare these birds away? What did you make of that idea?
Well, the idea in itself, without looking directly at the place and having, you know, all of the facts, you couldn't make a strong argument straight away. But having had experience of doing this professionally in the UK with falcons, I think the comment I kind of actually interjected on at one point and emailed you guys is when the discussion came up that falcons don't, or the New Zealand falcon doesn't hunt at night. Now, well, it is a daylight hunter, but they do also hunt at night. They've been observed in the wild flying under moonlight. They've also been seen flying almost at pitch black, dusk and dawn, catching things. And I've personally trained a multiple species of birds to fly down a spot lamp at targeted pest species for their removal. I mean, it can be, I've worked from nuclear power stations all the way through to landfill sites, removing large starling flocks from trees is something that we've done with hawks. So yeah, there's a background there, and it's something I've done. And
tell me about the spotlight thing. That sounds interesting.
Yeah, so the birds effectively are trained to fly. Initially, you train them to come to you with a spotlight, which is what they do in the day. And then when you're, say, let's for instance, we're in a barn and there's some pigeons up there on the rafters and you want them to catch those pigeons, you would shine the spotlight on the pigeon, which pretty much makes them freeze. They don't particularly enjoy flying into the pitch black, but the bird can see them. And the bird very quickly learns it has an advantage in the dark. They don't. I mean, their vision is phenomenal. And so with the aid of the light, you can really confine exactly where the bird will fly. And so you can shine this torch down at this pigeon, and then the hawk will take off, or falcon will take off, and they tend to fly off to the side. Once they've learned their tradecraft, they fly off to the side of the lamp. And the reason they do that is because if they were to fly directly down the lamp, it would cast a shadow on what they were trying to see. So they learn to fly off to one side, and they'll come in at the last minute and grab the pigeon or the rabbit or something like that. It's done quite a lot, and you know, from my background, I've not just done it for pest control. I've done it in the UK when we were trying to catch rabbits, I finished work and it's too dark to fly the bird in the day. It's something I've kind of decided, well, I'm going to do this with a bird, and I've gone ahead and done it. And it's used a lot around the world. It's very successful as a method.
How did you get interested and involved in the practice of falconry?
Well, I was 15 and sort of umming and ahhing about what to do, and I was just fortunate enough. I'd started a joinery apprenticeship, and the guy, Glyn, had just decided this is in Wales, where I sort of grew up, and he was like, you're not really interested in this. And then I mentioned I wanted to be a falconer, and he sort of chuckled and then mentioned a guy called Ian that he knew on the Isle of Anglesey. And I was put in touch, and then my mum bought me a day with him for my birthday present, and I went there and got in, you know, involved with him, and he was flying a goshawk and catching crows with it, which were a pest species there, and using what we call like a Saker hybrid, so a hybrid between two falcons to clear seagulls and things. So I spent about a year with him as an apprentice before he trusted me to get my first bird. There's a lot to it, and the care of these things is so specialized. It takes a long time to really get your head around exactly what it is you need to do. So,
Before you agreed to move to New Zealand, you wanted to make sure there were some birds of prey over here to work with first?
Actually, I moved to New Zealand and I was as a professional skydiver. When I was watching these birds fly, when we were doing some pest control one day, I was watching a falcon fly, and I always wanted to, how does that feel? How does that feel? How does flying your body through the air feel? Mm-hmm. And I tried learning to fly a light aircraft, and it wasn't really my thing. So I got into skydiving, and I, you know, got my license and started traveling around Europe and skydiving more. And it is as close as you can be to feeling like a bird of prey. So when I came over here, I was still working within the industry, but I had an injury about 3 years ago, and I came off a bike and broke my collarbone and did some pretty nasty stuff to my right shoulder, which prohibited me really doing it for a while. And so during that time, I needed something to do, and my partner Rose and I, we thought, well, we'll put our skills to use, and we sort of applied for a rehabilitation permit from the Department of Conservation, and they granted it to us. So we went through the motions and then started to set up aviaries and get going here, and we have birds that come into our care, and we do our best to get them back out into the wild. So yeah, that's sort of our mission statement, and that's how it all kind of collectively came together. So, I mean, we are still relatively small, and we are still building on what we have here, because we can never really keep up with the volume of intake, but we have limited ourselves to what we can contain and manage physically. So
I love watching the kahu when we're on holiday in Northland, although I understand they're not endemic to New Zealand. In fact, might actually be originally an Australian bird, but the kararia really is an endemic New Zealand falcon, right?
That's right, yeah. They are, and they're very interesting as a species of falcon, one of four forest falcons that we have in the world. And when you look at a falcon, like, say, for instance, a peregrine, which is the fastest animal on the planet, has very long, pointy wings. And these, we call falcons long wings, whereas our kararia has short, round wings and long tail. And they're absolutely adapted for hunting through the forest and sharp, twisting turns. They're a fascinating bird. And iconic here, and we are fortunate that, we have people here who put their lives pretty much to protect them and do everything that they can to bring them back into our lives.
When you think of manoeuvring, you tend to think of the fantail, but I understand the kararia can do some pretty incredible things, ducking and diving between branches as they're chasing kereru through the forest.
They are phenomenally agile birds, and you can actually go and witness this yourself here. There's a bird prey centre down in Rotorua called Wingspan, and they actually show you how these birds fly and perform in front of your face, and it is an incredible experience. And something that people can kind of get close to,
Yeah. You mentioned dock earlier. I imagine it's a bit complicated for you to sort of own and quote, use these birds, but you have some sort of permission and license to train them and work with them?
Yeah, so there is, obviously, you have to have a fair amount of skill to do this, It's not something that anyone can just go out, pick up a bird and figure it out. It will inevitably die, So Doc wants to manage that and make sure that the people who are doing this are doing it, one, for the right reasons, and two, have the skill base. So when you apply, you have to give your background experience and references, for instance, of, what birds you've dealt with, how long you've been doing it, what's your background with sort of dealing with birds that have injuries come in. It's all well and good being a falconer that's flown birds, but have you dealt with one that's had a broken wing, et cetera, and that kind of stuff. And we're fortunate here at Kahu Conservation that we can actually lean on a rehabilitation centre in Auckland for immediate, say, for instance, a bird gets a broken wing, we can take it there for kind of immediate care, and then we take over the physical, getting it back into the wild, the rehabilitation, the physio, as you call it, of getting that bird mentally and physically fit enough to get back into the wild. It's a long process, and you've got to think about a bird of prey in the wild. It's an athlete, it's an Olympic athlete, and it has to be 100% to survive. And if there's a slight problem with it, it'll die out. And so when we release a bird, we have to know 100% that that bird can go back into the wild and can compete with other birds and catch its prey successfully.
How many birds have come through your rehab, and how many do you have right now?
So we currently have six, and that would be four Morpork's Oruru and two Kahu at the moment. We've had quite a lot of Morpork's this year in particular. Not sure whether the weather has anything to do with it. We released two late last year that went back, and they hung around for quite some time, and it was amazing to see them hang around. And we've had quite a few kahu come through and be released as well. Unfortunately, we have birds that come in and just cannot go back, one in particular, someone had decided to keep one illegally in a cage that, you can't do it. It's against the law, and it had broken all its feathers. Now, up the feather shaft, they have a very sensitive follicle that goes into the wing, and these follicles have become damaged to the extent that when it was growing new feathers, which it needed to fly, they were growing back and they were deformed and twisting. And there's not much you can do for a bird like that. With some birds with broken feathers, you can what's called imp them. So you can take a feather from another bird that's molted it and splice it into that bird and give it a full set of feathers again so it can regain its ability to fly. But in this circumstance, unfortunately, the bird was euthanized simply because of, I guess, misconduct and misunderstanding and miscare. And that's the kind of the situation sometimes that we face.
Alan's listening. He seems to think the karerea were trialled at that Rotopiko, I think that's the sanctuary we're talking about, to get rid of the starlings and sparrows. He says the sparrows formed a large ball and sent the falcons on their way. That's pretty crafty. You ever heard of that before?
Well, they do. They will cover into a ball, and for instance, in that instance, if the say for instance the karerea wasn't as naturally as engaged as it was, there's other things and other tools that you can implement. And one of those tools is what's called a roe falcon, and a roe falcon is effectively what it sounds like. It's a robotic falcon, and it's flown in such a way that mimics a falcon. And these do terrorize their birds, and you've got to remember that they've evolved to deal with species attacking them, particularly starlings, you know, where they come from in the UK, where I've watched them, they've been attacked at the same time by peregrines, merlins, sparrowhawks and goshawks, all at the same time. Wow. And so they are completely equipped to deal with these birds. And you have to target them when they're vulnerable. And that's why I'm saying target them at night with a lamp, because they don't know anything's coming. And to these birds, it's like Dracula. There's something appearing out the mist. It comes and grabs them. They don't know what it is, and it keeps happening. And they associate that with a high-risk area to roost at night. And I've witnessed this, and we've bumped 10,000 starlings from trees that were sitting above a factory in Wales. In 3 days, they were gone. And this was how devastating it was. We were using a Harris hawk under a lamp at the time, and that's how well it worked and how efficient it worked. And I'm not saying that this is necessarily how they should go or how they should do it. I'm sure they've considered options. I'm just saying that that has been done, and these roe falcons have also been used and implemented very well.
David's listening. He wants to know if you have a daydream about training a harst eagle.
I think it would probably be a bit intimidating doing something like that.
So.
Probably get eaten during the process of it. You know, I don't.
Last
see one in real life, but whether I'd like to handle one or not, I'm not sure.
Yeah. Last question, Chris. Any sort of anything you need or these birds need from the general public while we've got you on the phone?
Yeah, I mean, we have set up we're a charitable trust, so we self fund everything, and we have a little page, and people have been incredibly generous. It's been overwhelming, and I think it just goes to show or reflect how much people care about these birds and how much they can, give when they see that there's a necessary reason for it. And you know, we've been given building materials, and we kind of need and still need that support. And learning more about raptors in an educational way is something that can help you learn to understand them more. The more you understand something, the more you want to protect it. And that's why I'm saying, you know, utilize what we have in New Zealand as facilities to go and see these birds as close as possible.
Nice one. Thanks for your time. Really appreciate it.
Hey, thank you, Jesse. It's been great to talk.
Chris Brook, co-founder of Kahu Conservation.